Welcome to the Onyx Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Dixie Cochran, here with Eddie Webb.
Hello.
And Matthew Dawkins.
Hello.
We didn't even make it through the intro.
Wait, 30 seconds. You're going off the rails. All right.
That was my Dixie Cochran. And I'm here all night.
I am insulted by your Dixie Cochran voice.
I'm not claiming it's a good impersonation.
To be fair, Dixie's impression is way better.
Anyway, so today we're going to be presenting another one of our panels from Gen Con. This is the freelancing panel that we did. So it was me, Eddie, and Megan Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. You're going to hear some of the same points that we covered in our freelancing for Onyx Path episode. But I think that between the questions that were asked and just having Megan there, we did talk about a few other things. So this is another really useful one to listen to if you ever want to freelance for us or honestly for almost any company in the industry.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, there were a couple things I know we haven't covered. Like, I was surprised that you hadn't heard about the term work for hire, so that's something else we dig into.
It's a term I had heard, and I just never really had it defined as, like, you know, this is the, like, you are doing this work on someone else's spec, because I've done more in, like, the writing industry and journalism, so I've heard more of, like, writing to spec than, like, work for hire.
I see.
But I totally, like, once you kind of defined it, I was like, oh, I know this term now, but that'll happen in the panel. Matthew wasn't here for this one. We didn't invite him.
Right.
No, I often feel excluded from these special events, you know, and I do wonder how long it will be before Megan becomes the third chair in these podcasts, given, you know, she's been a guest when I've not been here, she's in this panel when I'm not there. It's I feel distinctly unwanted and unloved.
Well, she is practicing her British accent, so, I mean.
And she doesn't really interrupt me. Oh. Also, I live kind of near her, so I could just go to her house and record stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is really attractive. I mean,
no, I don't know. 100% American, 100% of the time, doesn't seem very attractive, I think, to the rest of the world. But who am I? Who am I? Who am I?
Are we ever going to get through an intro in, like, a serious
no.
manner?
Spoiler alert, no, we are not.
I think we should break into musicals more often.
I'm totally down with that. I mean, I spent part of the day yesterday working on a parody song for our friend Jacob, so it which he then sang on his live stream last night and said he was really glad you weren't there, Eddie.
Why?
Because he was making an ass of himself. to which I was like, well, I could call him.
I'll say, also, he's heard this podcast, right?
Yeah. I think that's actually something that's kind of funny and actually is an interesting lead into the freelancing panel, is that we have these people that are kind of fans of the stuff we do sometimes, and then sometimes they become friends, but occasionally there's still this, like, thin line of them being either intimidated or still being a fan while being our friend.
Right.
That pops up occasionally. It's always super interesting to kind of see when it happens, because I don't think of myself as anything famous, you know? I don't think most of us do. I think we're just people that do jobs in an industry that we like.
Self-love.
How did I know? Yes, I realized that you're a gentleman gamer, and you are well above
all of us. He's working on his Dawson's Revulsion, so you have to give him some leeway.
All of us mere mortals.
Yes.
But,
yeah, so, you know, I'm building up my revulsiveness.
But the point is that when we talk to them at cons, we might have a drink with them, we might be playing games with them, or you might be interacting with them online. Like I said, when I watch his stream, like, I feel like I'm very much in, you know, his world, right. And I'm not the most important person. So that's actually just really kind of fun to watch, is like watch them become friends and then try to figure out how the new relationship goes from there when you're still working with somebody but they're not your friends.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of the Bloodline stream that I watch on Tuesdays, Ian Watson, after I posted a shameless tweet asking to be put in the game, put the Pathcast in the game.
Yes.
So if you have the most updated patch for Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines, there are posters for the Ivory Tower cast.
Which is just proof that we've made it. I mean, you know, forget iTunes, forget Google Play, which you should all go to and rate us very highly on. But Now we're in a 15-year-old video games. I mean, that's just.
Oh, no. This isn't it. This is not the peak of the mountain. We
Oh
are on the
no.
final slope. The peak of the mountain is when Ian puts our voices over the radio
Oh
in
yeah, there we go.
Bloodlines, so that in random places where you're passing by buildings, you can hear our voices emanating as if on talk radio.
Well,
There's the gambit. There's the gauntlet, Ian. I've thrown it down.
even better
Ian,
is
if you're to
if you
hear.
use the Requiem Deep Dive episode for that.
So the other cool thing I wanted to point out before we go into the panel was I forgot to mention this in the last two Gen Con episodes, and I'm really sorry. I'm a big cosplay nerd. I love cosplaying, and we had a few people cosplaying some characters, both from Bloodlines and from Exalted, at our
Yeah.
booth over Gen Con weekend. So we had a couple of different damsel cosplayers. One was from last year, and one was a new one from this year, so that was super cool. And there was a smiling Jack, which was awesome. And then also we had a really, really great Scarlet Empress cosplayer, and she had her tiny baby, I'm gonna say Nemon, with her. I don't know how to pronounce that one. It's Nemon. So any Exalted folks that wanna, school me on how to say that name, go for it. But tiny, tiny baby sleeping Nemon with Scarlet Empress was adorable. So
That is very adorable. And they were actually at our at this panel that we recorded.
yeah, and they literally left like 5 minutes before the end because I wanted to run over and be like, Scarlet Empress, what? Like, Exalted, yay! And I'm assuming had to leave for some reason, but I was sad. And then when they came by the booth, I was doing something else. So I was just like, no, I never got to talk to you. You're so great. So this is me on a podcast saying you're great.
And stunningly, I believe one of the damsels is dating. This is going to date this podcast now because, for all I know, they've split up. I hope not. But one of the damsels is dating the smiling Jack that we saw there. So, and it's not like these costumes were thrown on just anybody. They genuinely resemble the characters that they were playing. That was a lot of effort, and so the brouhaha vitae does run thick in their veins. And I still say vitae. People say vitae. I've said vitae, and I've said vitae since Milwaukee by Night, where it actually says that a character pronounces it like that in the chronicle at
Wow.
the back. So,
For those of us
up
that
yours,
haven't
anyone who
read,
says I'm wrong.
every single vampire book ever and also committed them to memory, I definitely say vitae. So, or, so, I don't know. We're all.
I say
Vite,
blood, so.
vite.
Yeah, I say blood. Blood. That's good. All right. Well, on that bloody note, let's go into the panel.
This is the freelancing for Ami's Path panel. We're going to talk about
It
probably a
is.
lot of general freelancing things, but when we get to specific examples, we're going to talk about specifically about our company. So some of this is going to be general, some of this is going to be fairly specific. I am Eddie Webb. I am one of the in-house developers for Onyx Path. I have worked on Vampire the Masquerade 20th Anniversary Edition. I created Pugmire. I now work on a gazillion games internally, it seems, primarily helping out with Scion, Trinity, Sylvie Rising Evolution, which you just announced.
Hi, I'm Megan Fitzgerald. I'm one of the freelance developers for Onyx Path, and writer. I'm the developer for Changeling the Lost Second Edition, and I also develop individual books for other lines here and there. And I've written for a whole bunch of Onyx Path things as well as some stuff for other companies. So.
I'm Dixie. I'm one of the other in-house developers at Onyx Path. Dixie Cochran, you all know the full names, I'll do that too.
Yes.
I actually was a freelance editor for Onyx Path and other companies for about 3 years. I just started doing the in-house development in February, so I do a lot of project management. I don't have a lot of books under my belt as far as development yet. I'm doing like four right now though, but I have edited almost every core book that has come out in the past 3 years, and lots of supplements. So there are a lot of books out there that if you open them, my name is just editor. So,
Absolutely.
yeah, it's fun.
So we actually have three different perspectives. We've all done a little bit of development, but Dixie's done a lot of editing. Megan's done a lot of writing, most a lot of game lines. I've done writing as well, but I'm moving more into consultation development. So we're coming from slightly different perspectives, although there's a ton of overlap. We'll kind of maybe chat a little bit about the basics before we go into the questions, I
Yeah,
think.
sure.
So freelancing in the RPG industry is extremely common, particularly with Onyx Path. Onyx Path does, even though we talk about we're in-house developers, we're not full-time employees.
Yeah, we don't have an office. We all work out of our houses.
Yeah, we are contractors. We're freelancers. Like we had a long-term contract, and like Dixie says, we're all remote and distributed, and that is going to be extremely common in the tabletop industry. That is the most common arrangement. And on top of that, most freelancers are going to be working on a project-by-project basis. So you'll be hired to write 5,000 words on this project. You'll be hired to develop this particular game book. You'll be hired to do art for this particular project. That's a very common structure. So a lot of what we're probably going to talk about is going to be project-based work-for-hire freelancing. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what that all means?
Sure, yeah.
So I don't want to keep talking.
I'm trying to figure out what it means. You just explained it all really well.
Well, I mean, what does work for hire mean?
Oh, like what does the process look like?
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, just like what work for hire is a very specific work style. I'll go ahead. You can't read my mind yet. That's fine.
Yeah, I don't know what you want right now, Eddie.
It's fine. You failed me. That's okay.
I have. I will accept this and bring dishonor on my whole family. Sorry, Mom.
Sorry, Mom. Nice knowing you. A lot of this kind of contract work is going to be what was called known as work for hire. And what that really means is at the end of the day, what the client wants from you is what's going to happen.
I see. I've never used that phrase talking to you, so I did not know that's what
work
you
work for hire, really?
Yeah, now I know.
Oh, I'm genuinely sorry. I really thought it's good to know.
I should sit over there and learn.
I have learned something today. as a counterpoint, as I mentioned, I created Pugmire, and I produced that in conjunction with Onyx Path, but that is creator-owned. I own the rights to that game, and I work collaboratively with Onyx Path as a creator, and we have business discussions about what the game needs to do and where it needs to go, and I have some creative autonomy with that game. That is not the rule. That is not the common arrangements. Much more common is someone like Dixie going to Megan and saying, I need you to put up 200,000 words book for Changeling, and yep. Here's what it needs to come.
Yep.
And Megan will go and do that book. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that contractors can't collaborate and discuss about these things. I know you had a lot of discussions with Rose about Changeling, for example.
Yeah.
So it's okay, depending on the company you work for, but with Onyx Path, we generally try to be collaborative and listen to what freelancers are going to say. Mm-hmm. But you need to know going into it that at the end of the day, if the person in charge of the project is like, nope, I need this, that's what you got to deliver. Or whatever you canned over, we'll just make sure that it conforms to that.
Right, yeah. Either, sorry.
Oh, I was just saying, which is the same not just from, say, Dixie to me, but then from me as developer to the freelance writers as well, that, you know, say Dixie says, okay, we need a book that's this many words and covers these topics. And then I'll, say, outline the book and say, all right, submit for approval, and she says, yep, looks good. And then I go to the writers and say, here's what I want you to write in more specific detail. And then that, whatever they produce is owned by Onyx Path,
right.
And yeah.
Right. Yeah, and that's the piece, is that work for hire means that the client, ultimate client, owns all the work you've done. You're paid a flat fee. There's some places where it gets a little nebulous, but in general, it's the we're gonna pay you X amount, you're gonna give us Y words, and it's ours now, thank you for your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one of the biggest things that we always say about freelancing, and we've covered it on our podcast, we've covered it in blog posts, is that you just really can't be super precious about your work. I know everybody wants to write their novel, cool, do that on your own time. Everybody
yep.
wants to write their vision for this. One of the biggest things that we've talked about a lot, and this happens a lot with new writers, mm-hmm. is we'll have new writers on, say, Exalted, which has a huge pool of writers. We have new writers, they've been playing the game for 10 years, they love the game, so they want to come in, they want to bring in all their homebrew, all the stuff they've read about online, all these things they've been thinking about for the past 10 years, and that might be completely antithetical to what we're trying to do with
life. I will save the game line with my genius.
Right. And so, like, when you're working for a company, you do really need to understand that, like, we do want your voice on some level, but we also want the book to not read like it was written by 20 different voices. So we need to be able to put that together. We need to be able to streamline that. We need to be able to go to you and say, hey, I really like what you did here. This is a really cool direction, more of this. Or hey, this went a little too far in this direction. We need to pull back on that. We have a process in the freelance world called red lines, which most of you probably at least heard mentioned. A lot of people don't know what that is. So you write your first draft based on the outline that Megan was talking about. So she's given you an outline. She said there's 5,000 words. You're gonna write about the kits for Changeling. You're going to outline, you know, it's,
they are kind of in this way, just detail this out. And then it comes back and maybe one of them is just completely not the vision she had. Right. She's gonna sit there, and I don't know if this happened, I wasn't in the process on Changeling. But maybe one of them is just completely wrong and she's gonna go, okay, maybe I didn't explain it well enough, maybe you just didn't understand me, whatever, we're gonna have to change all of this. As a writer, we're not doing this to offend you. We're not telling you you suck. We're not saying like, oh, this is the worst writing I ever saw. Like, I've never seen anything that I thought was awful. But there has been stuff that's been just wrong for what we're trying to do. That's fine. If you can take those notes and apply them, you have a really good chance of getting hired again. Our favorite writers aren't always the ones that turn in the perfect clean first draft, even though that's great, it never happens. But no. It's cool when it's, you know, really, really clean. But the people that will actually take the criticism, and if you say like, oh, you use too many instances, Matthew Dawkins hates the word that. Yeah. He hates it. He hates it. I kind of hate it too, because I come from journalism background, and that's a word we almost never use. It's not a good word. And he'll say like, okay, you use this a lot, remove it. And if someone only removes the one instance he flagged and doesn't go back through their draft and actually try to remove a lot of it, they didn't listen. So it's really about listening and collaborating. Feel free to push back on some things a little bit if you have something that you actually think is really good. And then it could be a conversation. It could be a collaboration.
Right.
Ultimately, final say is your clients. And that's for any company. Any company you're working for has the final say on going, that's not right for this. We really need to change it.
Right.
But it can be a conversation. And people that get really upset during the red line process or that can't deal with having their work kind of torn apart and put back together, that's maybe work for hire isn't what you want to be doing.
Right.
And that's fine. Like, go write your passion project, please.
Right.
I would love to see it.
Yeah.
And one thing, another kind of wrinkle to that is that sometimes a writer puts in a draft that's just unsalvageable.
Yes.
It happens extremely rarely. And when it does, it's not always the writer's fault. It could just be that the writer was not tonally good for the project. The writer did not have an understanding of the game that we thought they would. Whatever. At some point, it would actually be more efficient for me to hire a new writer than keep using you. In that case, we have what's called a kill fee. In that case, we pay you, I think it's 10%. Of the arrangement. So we respect the fact that you spend time on this. You know, we're not going to say, you know, pay you anything. You're going to get something for your time. But also, we're done with this conversation. You know, thank you for your time. Maybe we'll find another project for you. There's been a couple of people I've killed feed that have since gone on to other projects that have been great fits.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just doesn't work out. And that can be heartening. I've been kill feed before. It's awful. And I've even been kill feed for project, but it reassured me it had nothing to do with me. It was just the project got canceled and they said nothing to do with it at all. And so they killed feed me, but it still hurts. It still sucks. And so, again, when that kind of decision makes, you have to understand it's not because we don't like you. It's a business decision of, for some reason, your work is not suitable.
And for Onyx Path specifically, because our lines are so diverse. Like, if you can write for a vampire, you can probably write for werewolves. Those are similar worlds. But if you can write for vampire, you might not be able to write for Pugmire.
Right.
You might not be able to write for Exalted.
Right.
They are very different tonally.
Yeah.
So the person who is the absolute best, most wonderful Chronicles of Darkness writer might not ever work on Monarchies of Mal or, any of our projects that are completely different.
Right.
That's fine. We might try them out on one and go, oh, this doesn't work, but go back to your Chronicles work because you're really good at that, So, yeah.
But if you can do that crossover, that's really exciting. Actually, it's something I'd like to hear from you about a little bit because you've done a really good job of jumping.
Because you are our crossover developer.
Yeah. You develop everything. So, I mean, do you study the lines? Is it something that comes naturally to you?
So I actually like working on different lines with different tones because it kind of keeps me... It keeps me on my toes, but also keeps the work varied. It's like, if I work on the same game for too long, I start to get tunnel vision, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I actually love learning new tones and new lines and new games. I remember when I was doing V20 Dark Ages for Matthew, and he came to me and he said, hey, I'm looking for a writer to do the Constantinople chapter in this book. I need somebody who's really familiar with Constantinople by Night from the original Masquerade. I said, well, I've never read Constantinople by Night. Sorry, thanks for thinking of me. And he came back and said, well, how long would it take you to read the book, read the clan novels, get up to speed, and then write the chapter? I was like, oh, I could do that. And that was really fun. Like, I got to learn something new. Or you know, like, and then it happens either even with games that are not Onyx Path, or someone will come to me and say, have you ever played this? And I say, no, and they say, do you want to learn?
Yeah.
Because I'd like you to write this thing. And so, yeah, and it's just, it's a lot of, I'm a librarian by day, so I'm a detail-oriented person, and it's a lot of reading. It's a lot of reading and paying attention and just really extrapolating. Like, you have to be able to read one thing and extrapolate out conceptually and tonally to other things. Is a really valuable talent, I find, in writers, and to be able to cross lines like that or cross genres.
And even though all of us work for Onyx Path, all of us work for other companies too. All of us still have other freelance jobs.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I take those is because sometimes I kind of look at it and I say, okay, I've now edited the Chronicles of Darkness rule set 12 times in a row, and I don't want to look at it ever again. And then actually, I just bought this, and then I'll go do something super fun and weird, like Firstly, which is completely different from everything I work on Onyx Path, and it's a palate cleanser on some level.
Yeah.
So just because you, like, if somebody's in here and they're like, I really want to write for a vampire master, I really want it for that, okay, cool, like, you want to write for a vampire, look at some other stuff too, not even just from us. Megan works on Modern Age, she worked on Star Trek, like, those are nothing like our games.
Right.
Absolutely. That's great.
In fact,
and he's worked for every company that ever existed.
Yeah, true, yes. I not worked for TSR. I don't exist anymore.
joke. Only it's funny in this room.
I spent 3 months working heavily on Dystopia Rising Evolution, which is a post-apocalyptic game. It's not grimdark, but it's a pretty serious, heavy game. And then I got a small project to work on Freedom Squadron, which is Savage Worlds G.I. Joe. And I'm like, okay, thank you. You know, it's a tonal shift.
One of my favorite things was after I did Wraith 20 and Changeling 20 and all that, like, right near each other, was when Fantasy Flight came to me for Star Wars. And I was like, thank God. Thank God, let me edit Star Wars, please. Let me get out of this. So yeah, no, it's nice to, like they're saying, just to keep your brain open, try new things. If you want to be a freelance writer versus wanting to be a novelist or someone who creates their own line,
right,
and that's all they work on, then it is helpful to have a wide range, because that's also how we ended up recommending people to each other,
mm-hmm,
or to other developers outside of our company. A lot of us know each other. There's a lot of kind of whisper networking that happens, where I will go to some, like, my friend Adam from Postium, and I'll go to him and be like, do you have any indexers? Do you have any writers who are good at this thing? Bring them to me.
Right.
And people do the same to me. Like, half the jobs I've gotten have been because somebody went to Rose Bailey or somebody and said, do you know any editors? And she said, yes.
Yeah.
Here's a list.
and certainly there are freelancers who just focus on one company, or because it's not their full-time gig, or this is not what they're putting a career into.
Totally.
And that's perfectly fine. But to be clear, what we're kind of talking about is the fact that we don't expect, if you're friends with Onyx Path, that you're exclusive to us. We love that, because we as a company feel that our products are better if you do freelance with other companies, because you're going to learn something there,
mm-hmm,
that might be cool to bring back, and we as a company learn something better.
Yep.
And also, we like working with people outside of our normal sphere of influence. A fantastic example is we're working on Trinity Aberrant right now, which is a very superheroic role-playing game. And so Rich reached out to Steve Kenson, who has designed every superhero role-playing game you've paid in the past 10 years. Steve Kenson loved making superhero role-playing games, and so, or the natural fit, it's like, would you like to work on this one too? He's like, sure, I'd love to. I've been a huge Aberrant fan. But in the process of me working with him, I've learned a ton of new things I hadn't thought about before, things his approach to the process and what he likes to do and doesn't like to do. He's an extremely collaborative person, and so that kind of stuff really helps all of us get to become better.
My, like, current favorite weird crossover, I'm actually developing the adventure collection for Monarchies of Mal, which is just 3 pre-generated, you know, story adventures that you can run, you can play them. And the middle adventure is written by Dennis Detweiler of Delta Green.
Right.
Which is not who you would expect to write on a game about cats.
And yet, is.
And yet, he was writing this super cool, kind of creepy adventure for your cats to go on. And I'm like, this is a totally odd thing, but it's working, and that's fun.
And I think it's good.
And he's having fun on it, from what he tells me, because he's getting to not write Delta Green for like 5 seconds. You know?
Exactly right, and that's a good example, because it does go all the way up. And, you know, like, Dennis Detweiler has been doing this for a very long time, but even he's like, I just need a minute from Delta Green, just a second, you know. And
like, I was really excited. I told Eddie recently, over the past year, I've done Scion, Origin, and Hero. I've done Trinity, Korbuck, and Aeon. I also am doing the Came From Beneath the Sea right now. And I looked at Eddie and I said, if you give me Dystopia Rising after this and I have to edit the story path rules chapter one more time, I'm just gonna glaze over. And I'm not even gonna look. It's fine. It's probably fine, right? Because I don't want to deal with it. Luckily, we're taking a little break where I get to do a couple other projects between that. Because you do, you can get burned out on doing the same thing over and over again.
Right.
And me as an editor, I mean, I read every word of almost every book we put out. And sometimes all those books have the same rules.
Yep.
Or have very similar rules.
Yeah.
And so I get to a point where it's like, I don't wanna. I can't. which is when it's really nice. I will take another job like Parsley or like Star Wars, or I will be excited to edit like a fiction piece because I almost never do novels.
Yeah.
So when I get a novel, I'm like, this is so much fun. It's so different.
Absolutely.
So just keep your options open. Never feel like if you're working for us, you can't work for anybody else. That's totally fine. Never feel like working for anybody else, you can't still be applying to work with us.
Yep.
Like we love all the crossover. That it really is how you learn, how you grow.
Yeah, one of the things that we've mentioned a couple times is that for a lot of us, so for me, for instance, I have a day job where this is not the only work I do.
Right.
And
yeah,
one of the things that that's important to keep in mind is that for most freelancers, that's the case.
Yes.
Because most people are not going to have freelancing in the gaming industry as their full-time job. They're going to have another job.
Yeah, we are very rare in that respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the big thing, like sometimes a lot of newer writers approach it like it's a hobby because it's not their full-time job. So they think, oh yeah, it'll be just like homebrewing where, you know, I homebrew something and I put it on the forum on the internet and people critique it and it'll be just like that. It's not just like that. It's a job.
Yeah.
You're getting paid to do, and you know, there's a certain expectation of professionalism that goes with that. And
yeah.
Like Eddie was saying, like communicating with your developer,
yeah,
where if you run into a problem, look, stuff happens, right? Life happens. Sometimes
yeah,
you have to, you're not going to hit the deadline because you got sick or something happened, and that's okay, that's fine, as long as you tell your developer ahead of time that that's going to happen and you're in communication with your developer and you're professional about it.
Yeah.
It's totally fine, and you can say, hey, I need a 2-week extension because, you know, my car broke down and I got stuck in, I don't know, somewhere, or something happened, right? And something happens, and that's okay. Just tell us.
Yeah, there is a huge, huge difference. And we've had this happen a few times, even recently. There's a huge difference between someone who has a medical emergency, lets us know. If we have to reassign their project, they're usually really good about being like, I can't do this.
Right.
Or I can do this, but I need 2 more weeks. Great, thank you for talking to us. We'll figure something out.
Yep.
And the writer, the freelancer, who just stops answering your emails and you don't know what's going on.
Right, or like you get to the deadline and the draft is just nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Like,
and you're like poking them.
That's less good.
Or they tell you on the deadline that, oh, I didn't write anything, I can't do this tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I mean, basically just in general, like a professional attitude and a professional approach to it is really valuable and makes me want to hire you again.
Yeah, it doesn't mean you can't be friends with us. Like, I am friends with a lot of my writers and stuff on Facebook. But also, I think most of us in the industry are pretty good at drawing that line between, okay, we're being friends now, and
I'm talking to you as a boss now. Yeah.
And yeah, and like even with Eddie, like he'll tell you, we talk personally on like Facebook Messenger stuff during the day. If I have to actually ask him a work question, I tend to email him still.
Yeah.
Because yeah, that's a good line to have.
Yeah.
And I'm saying with a lot of people, there are a couple of writers that I'll occasionally, like last resort, Facebook Messenger.
Yeah.
I hate doing that. It's not professional. It makes me look bad, in my opinion. But if you haven't answered my other 4 emails and the other 8 places I've tried to talk to you, yeah. Hey, I see you're here. What's up? Where you at?
that actually is a good point, is that the default communication method professionally in the RPG industry is email. Individual companies, individual people may have different preferences. For example, I know Phil Percala does like do a lot of his work through Facebook groups.
Yeah.
So there are exceptions. But if you're not sure, assume email is the default communication method and work accordingly.
Yeah.
And also, just more of a personal piece of advice, I always write emails as if I assume it's going to be read in a deposition in court.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just be professional in general, like in your online presence and stuff like that too. I mean, well, as a freelancer, you're not technically representing the company. If you go online and you're talking about a project that you're working on, there's kind of an unspoken expectation that you're going to be professional about it, because otherwise, like, the developer's not going to want to hire you anymore.
Yeah, that's actually one of my favorite pieces of advice to give to people. If I have your email address, because you have emailed me, I am probably going to look at your Twitter. I am probably going to try to find you on forums.
Yeah.
If I go on forums and all you're doing is trashing a project that we do or trashing another company that we work with or something, then I'm not hiring you. Like, I have gotten submissions in the past month where as soon as I got it, somebody else brought to my attention, like, oh, that person is awful on forums. Cool, not hiring them. So I'm not saying you have to kiss butts all the time. You're allowed to be critical. Like, feel free to be like, I'm not a fan of this because of this. That's fine.
Right. Yeah.
That's not a red flag.
Yeah.
But if it's just constant negativity, especially if it's constant negativity about stuff you're trying to work on, sorry, we already have a vision for this, and you obviously don't like it.
Actually, it relates to professionalism. If the company has submission guidelines like we do, follow them, period. There are no exceptions to this.
There really
the people who think there are exceptions to this, I do not hire.
Our submission guidelines specify 500 words of setting, 500 words of mechanics. Sometimes if it's like 6-4, I'll handle that. That's a fudge. I'm not saying...
Your 10,000 word manuscript?
Stop it. I'm not reading it.
Yeah, and likewise, if once you're hired, if the outline says, write this thing, write that thing. Please, follow
yeah,
the outline.
Yeah, what? please write 5,000 words of rules. Oh, I wrote you 20,000 words of fiction and story. That's...
Right,
yeah.
But that's the reason why I say this is because submission guidelines are usually your first test. It's the can you follow instruction when you send things in. If you can't follow instruction, I don't think you're going to follow the outline, so I'm not going to hire you. Separately, you're making my life harder as the person who has to read your submission, which means I'm not inclined to want to give you work, which means I'm not going to hire you. We don't do the, it is not arbitrary. There are reasons why the submission guidelines exist, and they are sometimes idiosyncratic to each company,
mm-hmm.
but there are reasons why they exist. Assume that they are there for a reason and follow them. If after you get hired, you want to say, hey, I've noticed during the submission process, there's this thing that maybe you could do better, absolutely. Yeah, that goes back to criticism is fine in the right context, but
yeah.
Prove that you can follow instruction. Again, you're working for hire, you're working for a client's needs. So, you know, if you can be generally not dismissive of the project you're working on online, if you can follow instructions, if you can write to a deadline if you're communicative, those things, all three of us will agree, are way more important than you're a good writer.
Mm-hmm.
Way more important than you're a good artist.
Oh, yeah.
Way more important than you're a good editor.
I see some brilliant writers and artists that I just don't want to work with because you can't.
Yeah.
I mean, we've recently had people that are brilliant writers just drop off the face of the earth and not tell us why.
Yep.
Okay. Mm. Probably not getting hired again, you know? And that's just, it happens and it sucks because you don't want to lose the talent. But I would rather build somebody up who is enthusiastic and follows instructions and wants to communicate and wants to be there. I'd rather take that person and help them out than keep going to someone who's gonna, you know, screw me, essentially. And that's I would rather someone that needs a little help with their writing than someone that won't talk to me. And I mean, I feel like we're sounding really negative, which is not. Freelancing can be super fun, it can be super stressful. When I first started out, I was working full-time, actually I had two jobs. And then I also was freelancing. So I had three jobs for a long time. I would get up at 4:30 in the morning. I would go to my first job at 6 a.m. I would work until a certain time. Sometimes I would go to my second job. Sometimes after that, I would come home and edit until midnight. That was a decision I made. Don't feel like you have to do that. But also, we're talking about taking on too much work and stuff. That's another, I think, big mistake a lot of early freelancers make is not knowing how much you can devote to it. Creative work is draining. We even talked about this recently and internally where sometimes I edit for 4 hours in the morning and I go, I'm gonna have to go like read a research thing or do this later, like my brain's off now. It can be draining. And if you have a day job especially if you have a day job that's intensive where you actually do have to think and talk and do stuff as opposed to maybe like Megan actually gets some time to work at her day job on her freelancing stuff because her job is a little bit more chill. I know some people, like when I was in retail, I was there, I was on all day, I was doing this stuff all day, I was using my brain all day, and I would come home and try to use my brain a whole bunch more. And yeah, it was fun, but it was also really hard. So take on what you think you can. And don't be afraid to kind of, if Megan comes to you and says, hey, can you write me 15,000 words, don't be afraid to say, I can really only do 5,000.
Yeah.
Because we'll probably still give you 5,000.
Right.
And then we'll find somebody else for the other 10. Like, that's fine.
Yeah, because the alternative is you say, yeah, I can totally do 15,000 words, only you can't actually, and then I just have to end up finding someone else to do it later anyway.
Yeah, or you burn yourself out.
Yeah.
I have seen a few people, not just with our company, but other companies, say, like, yeah, I can do it, because they want to be positive. We actually... If anyone listens to our podcast, we did a whole bit about turning down work in a couple of our podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had trouble saying no for a long time because my brain was like, I gotta get my foot in the door. Oh, I gotta work on this, I gotta work on that, I gotta get as many credits as possible, oh my god. And now I'm at a point where I could say, I don't have time for that right now. Let me recommend one of my other editors to you.
I still have trouble. I turned jobs around 2 weeks ago.
All of us do.
Betsy and Dixie.
Oh, yeah. No, I hate turning work down, but sometimes you have to.
Yeah. So, like, know your limits. That's really important, especially if you have a day job. If you honestly can sit down and write 50,000 words in a month, and that's great for you, awesome, cool. If you only have the bandwidth to write 2,500, and we still wanted you to do that, great, that's awesome too. Like, we want people to be happy, we want people to be healthy. I actually brought a lot of my, I worked at a Sephora for 3 years, as you don't know, that's a makeup store. I kind of knew you were going to know. I could just
tell. The templates.
I worked at Sephora for 3 years. Sephora has a really awesome set of company values. One of them is work-life balance. When I started freelancing for OnyxPath, I used that phrase with some of my developers all the time. I think I said it to you. Be like, hey, I know you're taking on more projects. Is this okay? How's your work-life balance?
Yeah.
And I try to check in with them, because if a developer or a writer starts to slow down and they previously have been doing really well, or they start to kind of slip and you're like, wait a minute, you've always been on top of things, what's going on? Are you working too much? How's your real life? Do you need a week off? Do you need to take a project off your plate right now? Do you need to transition this to somebody else? I can do that. Like, what do you need from me? I try to really be here to support all my writers and freelancers and developers and artists and everyone. Like, I want to support them. And if we continue the collaboration, we continue communicating, then it's really, really easy to support people. Like, I have had people, family tragedies happen. Like, I've had somebody recently that had something really bad happen. And when it happened, she pretty much said, like, I don't care what you have to do. If you have to reassign me, cool, whatever. I haven't talked to her in a little bit. I'm leaving her alone. She's doing her thing. And we reassigned the work. And I'm not mad at her. I will hire her again. That wasn't her fault. We've had people that had medical emergencies. If they, once again, they will come to us and go, I just don't think I can do this. I thought I could, but now this has happened and I can't. Thank you for telling me. Now we have a heads up. We can do it. It's great. But, you know, take time for yourself, please. Like, I'll occasionally get up in the morning having a bad day, having a rough day. I have anxiety. I think a lot of people struggle with that in this community. Because it's, you know, geek community in general. A lot of us are anxious and strange. That's okay. And I've had days where I've gotten up and I've emailed the team and said,
nope,
I'm gonna sit on the couch today. I can't. I'll probably work Saturday. That's cool. I'll make it up. Or maybe I just take Wednesday off this week. And we're supportive of that.
Cool.
Yeah. So, communication, work-life balance.
Yeah, and I was about to say, this is actually a good point. We've been talking a lot for like half an hour for a bunch of stuff with you guys, so let's flip over to you. If you guys have questions, we can answer them. If not, we're happy to keep babbling.
I think it's something I'll talk about.
Start at the top of the funnel. Where are there job boards? Like, how does someone get actually started in freelancing for this specific community if they already are a writer or an editor?
I wish there were job boards. I know that there was an attempt at a project like that about a year ago. It kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
Because the business model for job boards is that the companies pay for listings. And my experience, most RPG companies have more talent than they have projects. So there's no incentive for them to do job boards.
Okay. Network, I need your business card.
Yeah. Right. So honestly, the best thing you can do is what you're doing right now, which is you show up to shows, you show up to panels, you get your business card out to people, you go to companies, you follow submission guidelines, you submit something in. If you don't hear anything in a few months, send a different submission in. It's a lot of hustle, especially in freelancing. You can't just go to a job, click a button and go, I have employment. It's, you have to work people, you have to network. I know those are awkward, scary words, but it's true. You have to make relationships with people, and eventually you'll get one thing. One thing recently I've encouraged people to do is that if you are trying to find work and you don't have it yet, put something up on Storyteller's Vault, DM Skill. It's one of the community content programs for DriveThruRPG. Make your own game within DriveThruRPG.
And you will be getting paid for that, because that's how those programs work. Like, Storyteller's Vault, you write something for it, you put up your project. Like, that money doesn't go to, you know, me. Like, you're making a product, people are buying it.
Right, and then that becomes then also part of a resume that you start showing around. It's like, because then you go back, hey, we talked 6 months ago, you didn't have anything for me, now I've also put this thing up in case you want to take a look at it to see how I've grown as a writer and how I've learned some stuff.
Yep.
And that puts them fresh in their mind, and also you have an additional piece to work with.
Yes?
Bringing up the Storyteller Vault, like, where does that differ from where, because I've seen the Storyteller Vault come up, where does that differ from where you guys are at? Is that Is that something that you guys are connected with, or is that something else entirely?
Storyteller's Vault is completely run and managed by White Wolf. That's all handled by them. That said, we are rolling out our own community content programs. I have Canis Minor for Pugmire, so people can start selling Pugmire stuff. We just did
Slurisian Vault.
Slurisian, I know how to pronounce that word.
No one
Slurisian
can say it,
Vault.
Buddy. It's okay.
For Scarlands. It's only the game I'm responsible for, no big deal. We have plans, we've announced plans for similar projects for Scion and Trinity. Mm-hmm. So we are starting to do those kinds of community content programs. But that said, we still do make World of Darkness games. So if you put something up for Storyteller's Vault, that doesn't involve us, but it's still a sample you can show us, saying, hey, I do know how to write Vampire the Masquerade. I do know how to write, Werewolf the Forsaken, or Apocalypse. I'm just talking at this today. But you can also do that for any game. If you do a 7C project, it's not the stuff we do on, but that shows you know how to make a project from start to finish. You know how to write flavor. You know how to write mechanics, and you know how to make an entertaining project. That's still stuff that we can do despite which game it's for.
Yeah, and that is, when we're looking for new writers for stuff, we do go through our submissions, but sometimes we do go look at Storyteller's Vault projects. Like, I've been known to do that. Like, I'll go look at people that are writing on that stuff. Isn't where we got Joshy from, Mosquitoes?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so one of our people who's actually writing on Monarchies of Mount Pugmire project now is someone that submitted something to...
Oh, Erica. It was Erica.
Oh, it was Erica. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I get a mix. I forgot where we get people. But, like, that was a resume, because they wrote something really good that was already... They got the tone, they got the flavor. We said, cool, come on. Let's actually hire you. Yeah.
Okay, so if I had something, let's say, a project in mind, it'd probably be better to do the Storyteller Vault first, put that out there, and then submit something to you guys rather than just submitting my idea to you guys, because that way I get my story out as well as you guys get to see it.
So,
is that what I'm
kind of
getting?
If you want, there's two separate threads to that.
Yeah.
The honest answer is we have so many projects involved in our work right now that if it's just an idea to us, we're probably never going to get to it.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you say, hey, I want to make this cool book, granted, we may already be working on that cool book. We may already have our own ideas for the cool book, or we may never have time to get to that cool book.
Or we may have talked about that cool book and then went, let's not do that.
Right. So if you have a cool idea for a project, definitely look at the community content programs and consider that route. What we're talking about is, hey, I made this cool project, I start to finish. Do you have other work that might be interesting to you? And then we will say, cool, we think it'd be good for this project. Yeah. So the cycle is not, you pitch a cool book, we hire you, then do that cool book. That almost never happens. Occasionally someone will submit a book project that we like, but then we will sign some people that we think are the best fit for that, which may not be you.
Right.
And again, that's harsh, but that's the reality of it, is that someone we haven't worked with, but someone versus someone we know consistently will give that project the due respect it needs, we're going to focus on that. We're going to make sure the best project we can sell.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, if it's the, I want to make this book, that's not the best route to go. Look at the community content stuff, or if it's not possible to that, like you want to make your own game and put up a drive-through RPG. That's fantastic. If for some reason, let's say you make a fantastic Vampire the Masquerade book and you put it up on Drive-Thru Vault, and for some reason White Wolf says, yeah, we want Onyx Path to do that book, we may say, cool, could you shut that off? We'll pay you for that, and then we'll then hire you to work on the project we're working on. That is a possible route that we have planned out. It's not that exact thing has never happened yet.
It hasn't happened yet, but...
But it is something that we have planned for that could happen.
Yeah, that is something... If at some point they do the Exalted community content, that is something that we're going to have to look at from a development stance from that team. Because we have so many books planned out, and it is entirely likely that somebody will put something up that is almost exactly what we're trying to work on.
Right.
And if so, we're going to be like, okay, you want to come work with us instead? Because you just wrote it. So that's the one that we have the most plans for. So I'm kind of like, if they do the community content for that, that's the one that I'm the most like, we're going to have to really watch that a little bit.
Yep.
But it's also going to be a great place to find new writers. And so it's exciting at the same time.
It is.
Because I am all about finding new writers.
Yep. Any more questions?
So to kind of go into almost a more crunchy kind of question.
Yeah.
So I get pulled onto a project.
Yeah.
And I do my first draft.
Yeah.
I tend to overwrite by 5% just because I tend to be wordier.
Only 5%? Congratulations.
5%.
Tell me about Joe Carrick.
Or Phil Bricado.
Oh God.
We love Phil.
He's overwritten so much, all that overwrite became a separate book. You're fine.
Mage 20 was supposed to be 300,000 words.
Love you, Phil.
It is 700,000 words.
Yeah, I
think
that's probably a low ball, but that was humanity.
Sure, right.
Yeah.
Because I'm wordy, and I'd rather have you fluff. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's uncommon.
I would like to give you a piece of advice from Matthew Dawkins.
Okay.
Every sentence you write for an RPG product should contain a plot hook.
Yeah.
If it does not, it's not that necessary. I get flowery stuff. I love flowery writing. My own writing tends to be very flowery. I've had trouble with this.
Right.
When I first started doing any kind of writing for submissions, even in college, my teacher was like, you read a lot of 19th century literature, don't you? Yes, I do. I do, actually. He's like, because you have sentences that have three paragraphs of information in them for no reason.
Ooh, these paragraphs.
Can you cut this into short sentences? I was like, short sentence? Short sentence? I'm offended.
You'll pull my semicolons in my dope old dead hands.
Once again, semicolons are life.
It's easier to put more content in than have you go, I don't like that content. I guess it's where I'm going.
And if all the content is worthwhile, great, we'll decide what to cut.
Right.
Or Megan might come to me if you were working for like Megan. And she might come to me and say, like, hey, can we put an extra 200 words in this section? Because they're really good words.
Sure.
And really, when we say we're writing a 20,000 word book or 200,000 word book, we're not writing a book that clocks in at 200,000 words. We're writing a book that might be 199.8. It might be 2015.
Yeah.
Not a big deal. Like,
they're not limits.
Right. The issue is that if we have 20 writers on a book and everyone overwrites by 10%, now the book is way too big and it's wrong.
Right.
And our director is mad at us. And Rich is going, we didn't budget for that.
Right.
And we are going, wait, what did we do?
And one thing that, to keep in mind, particularly, because it seems like, well, you just add more words. The two big factors of reason why you can't are, A, if we print the book, adding more pages, you only do them in certain chunks, 16 or 64 pages, depending on the printer.
Mm-hmm.
Which means if you're a little bit, we have to pay for a whole new spread, and that increases the price of the book and increases the printing run. Separately, even if it goes just to print on demand or just a PDF, we have a certain calculation for how much art we have per word count.
Yeah.
So if you overwrite too much, we have to buy additional art, which means that we're putting more money into the project than we originally anticipated.
Yeah, because you don't want to read a role-playing game book where there's just like 60 solid pages of just words in the middle. Like,
right.
You.
Sure.
Well, particularly honest, Pat Books now.
Shadowrun is special. Sorry, he said Shadowrun after I said that. I love Shadowrun.
Yes.
I also love that as a decker, I get two entire sets of rules for myself. And I get to play my own game in the middle of any game I play.
Yes.
Because I'm a jerk.
Yeah, I have two questions, and I
realize
that the answer to both of these could be at the end, but
probably.
Yeah. So what would you say for like an average project and freelancer, the one that you would take, for example, what's the word like, or the word count going to be for just your average standard project?
So I would say probably for newer writers, I tend to give them slightly smaller word counts if I can. So 5,000 words, 10,000 words is pretty good for the, I'm trying you out, I'm not entirely sure what's going on here. For writers that I know can really handle it, we're probably looking closer to 20,000 to 25,000 words. The metric I found works for me is that I assume the writers can write 1,000 usable words a week.
Okay.
Sorry, 2,000 usable words a week.
I was like, wait, that's...
No, sorry, man. I was thinking of different words. No, about 2,000 usable words a week. That does not mean you're literally doing 2,000 words a week. It's rather, you might do a lot, have to cut down, you might rewrite, you might throw some stuff out. So if you're a writer that I know is solid, I'm going to assume that if I give you 10,000 words, I give you 5 weeks to write that in.
Yep.
When
I'm looking at outlines, anything up to about 30,000 or so doesn't make me raise eyebrows.
Right.
Once I start seeing people with like 50,000 word counts or 60, I'm like, wait, what? Who's doing
right.
this?
On the flip side, Steve Kenson on Aberrant had 107,000 words. But he's been doing this for a very long time and knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah.
So I trusted him to do that because it's him and we have a relationship with him. We joke about Phil Bricado. Phil Bricado, when he's on, does a lot of really good work.
Oh, no, yeah, he can hammer out
a ludicrous
amount of work.
He's been doing this for 20 years.
Right.
But if you're just starting out, when I did Dystopia Rising, it was a lot of new writers to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone got about 10 to 20,000 words. So I had a lot of writers on a book, which is unusual. It's like 9 writers. It's atypical. But it was a big book, and I wanted to make sure a lot of new writers got a lot of experience on it.
Yep.
So I made that choice. But I didn't want to give anyone too much, because if you give something too much and they drop out, that's a much bigger hit on your dev time.
Yeah.
Then, okay, you drop 5,000 words, I can write that if I need to. You know?
We're trying out a bunch of new writers on Exalted right now, because we honestly just needed more writers for it, because a lot of our writers have been graduating to become developers and things, and then we're like, no, come back. I say graduating just because if you show really good promise as a writer and you're also obviously really good at communication and really good talking to people, we may start to throw you into the development thing, especially if you come with us with good ideas.
Exhibit A, Shark Tank.
But because of that, I've got a book that's about 100, I think it's about, what's air? It's 141K, I think.
Something like that.
It's like a 150,000 word book. And then I have a lot of writers with like 2,700 words and 3,000 words. On the flip side of that, once again, like you were saying, I think I told the story to the panel yesterday, but some of you were different people. I got my outline for all the writers for Lunar's Things at the Gate, which is the next big Exalted book. And I'm looking through all the word counts, all of a sudden it says, you know, Robert Vance, 85,000 words of charms. And I said, that's very heavy mechanical work. He is one of the devs, but I was still like, but you're also a dev, you have to do development work. And I kind of went to them and I said, can we drop his word count? And he just looked at me and said, I've already written 50,000 of them. I said, oh, that's okay then. I will pay you for the ones you've already written. Because he does it for fun. Like, that's honestly fun for him. I don't know why.
It depends too though, like some developers have different preferences and then some books call for different things. So
yes.
Like I think it was the Promethean Night Horrors book had like a ton of writers on it and nobody had more than 6,000 words. Even like experienced writers were only doing 6,000 words because the developer of that book decided that was easier for him to handle and you know it made for just a different experience and that was what he wanted from that book. And likewise, if the book is short or if the book has like, this chapter is only 5,000 words long, well, then I only need this person to write 5,000 words. I don't have to give somebody 20,000 words if the whole book is 20,000 words. Like,
right.
I want it to be written by multiple people, so.
I'm working on a very, very small project right now for Cavaliers of Mars, and I think the whole project is only, like, 4,000 to 6,000 words, or, like, 8,000, and I'm doing 2,000 of them.
Right.
So, I mean, that's a two-person book.
And
it could be a one-person book.
There are some projects that, like, the one writer writes a whole thing.
Or, like, so I'm doing the monthly releases for Exalted and 100 Devils Night Parade and Adversaries of the Righteous, and, like, the whole book, when it's compiled, will be really long, but each one of them is, you know...
Like a 2 to 4 page spread.
Yeah, it's like between 800 words and 2,000 words each entry. And so for that, for Adversaries, I have a whole ton of writers, all of whom, you know, have these small chunks of word count that they're doing, because it's like, yeah, I can do 5 adversaries in, you know, however much time.
Yeah. So it does depend,
right.
but with reason.
Right. There's context and parameters of each depends.
Okay. Didn't you have 2 it depends questions?
Oh, yeah, my other question is just more of like a fun question for you guys. So it's like, you're writing for different games all the time. How does that impact your gameplay? So assuming your fans of gaming in general, like, this.
Does anybody have time to
play? Play games.
Yeah.
Games.
What
does that mean?
Play.
I don't understand.
Chef who cooks who doesn't want to cook when he goes home.
So my answer is a little weird. I would love to play games more. I almost never got to. I just didn't have a group for a long time. I just moved. I should have a group soon. My answer is a little strange because editing is not reading. It's really weird. I'm technically reading. I'm not digesting anything. If you ask me what I edited a month ago, I'm honestly not sure. What was the last thing I edited?
Was it Mal? No.
See? I don't know. People will ask me, like, Chronicles of Darkness mechanics questions. I can tell you I've read that rule 9 times. I should be able to quote it. It goes right on my head. So for me, it doesn't really impact it at all because I'm still coming to the games for fun. Like, I don't... In our books, for all that the fiction is fun, I'm not getting a narrative. I'm not getting to interact with anything. I'm just reading rules. So I think for me, it doesn't really impact me too much. Aside from that, I am a lot... better at becoming quickly familiar with things, whether it's one of our games or somebody else's, because I do know how to read role-playing books a lot better than I did before I started. Mm-hmm. Before I was one of the people who would just be like, okay, character creation, a little bit of setting, like figure out what you need, go play the game. Mm-hmm. Now I'm more interested in kind of what the intent was from the publisher and kind of going like, oh, I see what this is meant to do, I get it, like this is more interesting to me now. But I in and out my head half the time. I think y'all have very different.
So for me, like you guys said, I don't have a lot of time to play games, but I really try to make time, at least a little, because for me, I find it, that it's important for me to play the game so that I keep my head in the game, if
that
makes sense.
Like, it's research.
Like, writing rules requires that you understand how games work at the table.
Yeah.
So if you've never played it, it's a little bit harder. It's not to say you can't. I mean, you can write rules for a game you've never played, but it's harder, and it's a lot easier to really come up with something that's very well suited to the game and that's creative and that fits really well and is an elegant mechanic or something like that if you actually play the game. And so I do try to make time to play at least, you know, one or two games every so often, just to make sure that I'm staying in the game.
Yeah, and honestly, that builds where I was going to say, which is that it is hard for me to not play games and not think of them as research.
Yeah.
That's really how I approach it now. I do play, because I also work in video games, so I do play like video games as well. But a lot of my choices in which games I'm playing are based on what I can learn from them, as well as how much fun I'll have with them. I have played games that I have personally disliked because I can learn something from them. But sometimes I play games I love and I learn stuff from them. I continue seeing the praises of the Persona series. There are some tabletop role-playing games that I genuinely love and have learned a lot from, like the Sherlock Holmes Consulting Detective games. But I'm always in the back of my head going, what can I learn? How can I do this better? What can I pull away from this? It doesn't make it less fun, but it does mean that I'm engaging a different part of my brain, and sometimes what I'm getting out of it is not what the other players at the table are getting out of it, and I have to be mindful of that.
Yeah, because sometimes people are just having a good time, being silly, you know, especially with some of the more like fun, kind of light games. And then we're sitting there going, like, wait a minute, this mechanic, isn't it?
Right.
And like, you don't need to approach everything that seriously sometimes. So like, turning off the I work in the games industry part of your brain can be difficult.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think I'm probably more successful than people like y'all are, because y'all are so much more immersed in the creation.
Right.
But it's still like, I have heard most creators say that. Side note, is this an hour and a half panel or
no,
an hour panel? Okay, so we have like 7 minutes.
Yeah, I would say we have time for about one more question.
Okay. Well, I thought it was an hour, then it was an hour and a half, it was a whole thing.
Right.
So.
Okay, so mine actually comes from the art department.
Okay.
Cool.
What generally are you looking for in your artists, and also is the dynamic fairly similar with your writers, where you randomly mentioned how somebody who works in Chronicles may cross over and work in a Fire Emblem or
Solitaire? So it's actually a very similar process. We do have art submission guidelines as well. And actually a little easier than the writer's guidelines. Basically, it's just link to your portfolio, contact information, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And our art director is Michael Chaney. He is a fantastic art director. He is grumpy. Understand that.
He's a big teddy bear, but he comes off as really gruff.
Right.
So
he loves
just, like,
show him a picture of puppy dog and he'll be fine.
Yeah.
For
real. That's how we handle.
But you are correct in the sense that if your style does move around, he'll move around with you. A lot of our, when we started Pugmire, for example, no one had, we just made the game. No one had done anything really like that before in our stable. So he started looking at people who could reach that level. And most of them were established pros we'd worked with before. There were a couple of new artists, but a lot of them were people who were trying this for the first time. He helped them move them on. And we had lots of conversations about, here's the look. Rich Thomas, our creative director and the owner, is an artist. He started working in art 30 plus years ago, so he also knows this very well. And so they had lots of conversations. Rich has very strong opinions about what will and won't work, but he does filter that down the mic and then filter down to the artist. Here's what you need to do. And if you can do that, if you can draw and produce to specification and to hit the visual targets we need, then he'll say, cool, let's try you out on Trinity. Let's try you out on Scion. Let's try you out on Chronicles of Darkness.
Yeah.
A lot of our more prolific artists slide around constantly. I mean, we don't have, there's not enough Mark Kelly around to give him all the projects you want to give him around, you know? we would love to give Gatos as much work as possible could on anything he wants to work on. Some things don't totally work. You know, if your style is very strong and vivid, that might be fantastic for, say, Vampire, but may not work for Monarchy's amount.
I guess, hey, you don't want Samurai on Pugmire?
Yes and no. I kind of do, but I don't think anybody else does.
He's one of our creepiest artists.
Yes,
he
is
a lot of the stuff for Geist.
Gorgeous, gorgeous stuff. Extremely creepy.
I will say one other thing. Keep in mind that the art is still the work for hire thing we were talking about. I'm kind of involved in the art direction process for Dragonblooded right now for Exalted, and there are a lot of things that we have sent back and forth 5 times. Because if you're an artist and I tell you, okay, this character is a tall, very dark-skinned black man with dreadlocks, and he's dressed in, you know, this kind of pants and these kind of boots, whatever, and I don't get that, then you're not paying attention, you're not following directions, or it's back to the following directions.
Right.
We try to be really specific in our art notes to make them diverse, because a lot of artists default to white men in everything. So we spent a lot of time going like, this character is a very dark-skinned black woman, she looks like this, whatever. Yep. Or this character is, you know, obviously Japanese, etc.
Right.
But yeah.
That's a brilliant Scion, for example.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But following instructions, that's literally, it's such a weird thing because you learn it in, what, preschool? And yet, that's the most valuable thing you can
really
bring
is
to freelancing, is being able to follow instructions.
Oh.
So like, as an artist, your personal style is awesome, but we also still want the book to work together, you know? That's kind of something that we...
Right, there's a balance between we want to show a range of visual diversity in terms of art styles. I'm going to show a range of art styles in the book, but they also have to feel like they are of a piece. And again, Mike is fantastic as an art director to make sure that he's picking the right voices and the right artists to hit that spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
But we do need to hit within that certain line. And so like when we work on a new game line, one of the conversations I as a developer have with Mike and Rich is, okay, what's our visual target? Let's pull a bunch of art of pieces from art and go, okay, less this, more this kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then the artists need to be able to work within that box.
Yep. That said though, I am not a visual person at all. I have trouble, you know, I can't always, as a developer doing art notes, I can't always say, yeah, this is exactly what I want. Sometimes my art notes are, well, kind of like this and that, and then, like, Mike Chaney will email me and say, what do you actually, like, what do you mean by this? And I'll be like, you know what? The artist is going to be better at this than I am.
Right.
Yeah.
They can, I want to see what they come up with, because I don't have specifics. And every single time I've done that, the thing I get back is awesome.
Actually, this art piece right here. This was the cover for New Wave Requiem. I was a developer on that. The art notes I wrote for this cover do not look like this at all.
Yeah.
What happened was the art director said, your art notes are great, I'm ignoring all of them, it's going to be different, and it's a much, much better piece.
Yeah, the original concept for New Wave Requiem was one of those like super 80s, I forgot who's the famous artist, the iconic artist.
Neagle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be that. That was like the original concept from what you told me. This is way cooler.
Yes.
Like, to the point where this is on my business cards.
Right.
Just saying. Yeah.
What?
Nagel with blood. With
yeah. Yeah, and that was kind of the point. It was like, wait, I want that art style. And they're like going, okay, so that's cute. But you're wrong. And I was.
Yeah.
You have to trust the artist.
And this is literally, I think, one of the best covers that
it really is.
We put out this company.
So sometimes the artist does get to kind of stretch their creative muscles.
Yeah.
But again, communicate with the director. We'll see what he says. But I think we are done, so thank you guys very much for your time.
Yeah.
Well, that was our freelancing panel. Yay! I think
I wish I'd attended.
Well, you can listen to it forever if you want. Just let it, you know, wake you up in the morning, put you to bed at night. Just keep it on repeat. I think what's interesting...
I don't know how.
Yes.
I'm just going to keep interrupting.
Go ahead.
Because, you know,
go
that's
ahead,
what I do. I've been silent for the last hour or so. I'm becoming the character in this podcast, and this isn't by design, who moans.
Oh, no.
I'm the, yeah.
You're the wet blanket.
No, I need to... Yeah, I am the wet blanket of the Onyx Pathcast. This isn't good.
What were you going to moan about?
I don't know anything really. sorry.
He's going to moan about the fact he's something to moan about.
Yeah, I'm going to take a good look, a good ruminate, think about myself, and let you talk about the episode that's just gone. You carry on.
Okay, you go. You go have some self-reflection time.
Mm.
What I was going to say was I think it's really interesting that the biggest takeaway from a lot of the freelancing panels and even the freelancing episode that we did, it's literally a lot of it boils down to follow instructions.
Yeah.
Now, that's of course, more nuanced because follow instructions sometimes means get rid of writing that maybe you really liked or, you know, write something that maybe isn't your passion project, write something that maybe you don't even care about, you know, but... It's still follow instructions.
Well, and also there's kind of an extrapolation of follow instructions is that if the developer says, hey, I need this book to be X, and then as the writer you hear specific direction that sounds like it's contrary to what you believe the book should be, pushing back and saying, I think the book would be better if we do this, is to a degree following instructions.
Yeah. One of the instructions that I need you to follow is to, you know, talk to me.
Right.
Like, have a dialogue.
And that's something that you kind of have to just train people a little bit to learn how to do. I was actually just in a business meeting with a local company that's trying to do something similar in the sense of training authors how to become better business partners. And I realized during that conversation, it's a lot of what we're doing to a certain extent is, you know, freelancers come on board and it's like, here's, you know, we teach them to a certain degree how to be more reflective, how to follow instruction while also making sure the product is better and fighting dying on the right hills and all of those kind of elements, you know, making sure that you're have a social media presence that, you know, announcing a product when we're ready to announce it and excited about it when we're ready to be excited about it. All those little details kind of come up during the course of your career as a freelancer. And to a certain degree, the developer is the person who's kind of offering direction and scope and guidance on those fronts.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, no, it's just really interesting. Like, the more parallels I find with other jobs, the more that I do this job.
Mm-hmm.
And also just where you can apply some of the lessons that we take here to, you know, other things. It's like, follow instructions, okay, but maybe you need clarity, maybe you need this, that's fine. Right. Like, I just did a big edit project on a novel, and the two authors of the novel are talking to me a lot because they didn't agree with some of my decisions, and I totally respect that. So mm-hmm. in some places, I'm happy to explain, like, this is just Onyx Path style, so we do need to do it this way. And in some places, I'm happy to say, like, nope, that makes sense. Go ahead and reject those changes. I totally respect you, you know? But it's been very much a dialogue over the past week or so. And that's been great because I absolutely love getting feedback because that honestly makes me a better editor, too.
Absolutely.
Because if they're pointing out things that I'm like, oh, that actually makes sense. Maybe I should think about putting that in the official style guide. Then, you know, that's helpful. So I'm just going to go over here for a second and check on Matthew. Okay. Yeah. Matthew, you all right?
Oh.
Are you a ghost?
Whoa, and thrice whoa. I've actually got a question, a freelancing question for you. I feel like I'm calling in now. Hello, Dixie. Hello, Eddie. A big fan of the show.
Long-time host, first-time caller.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I'm there, but it doesn't really matter.
I thought you sounded better, but not sure. Anyway.
So, without naming any names, I freelance for a few different companies, and sometimes in the role of developer, sometimes as a writer, sometimes just as a consultant. And for one of the companies, not our own, a writer has come to me on a project for which I'm not the developer.
Mm-hmm.
And they have received some pretty intense red lines that ask them to rewrite a big chunk of a very hefty chapter.
Yeah.
And they're putting the need to rewrite down to the outline itself and instructions from the very start of the project, which lasted for several months, being pretty weak, and dialogue with the developer never really being as open as they wanted. But and so they saw it as carte blanche to be creative, be imaginative, and certainly I have had assignments where the outline has been very free and said, you know, follow your gut.
Right.
But now the red lines have come in and they're saying, well, what we actually want is this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
And the writer is feeling pretty aggrieved by this turn of events. How do you recommend that writer act? Because presumably the first thing you'd tell them to do is go to the developer.
Right.
But let's say the developer says, well, those are my instructions, so deal with it. So what do you think? What do both of you think?
I'm going to let Eddie go first. He's done this a little bit longer than I have. I know what my like gut reaction is, but I want to kind of about it for a second.
Okay, fair enough. I'll say it.
I mean, if you want to hear my gut reaction.
I do actually want to hear your gut reaction.
How magnanimous.
Okay, so, I mean, I think that sometimes you're doing a project, especially, like, even when you're developing it, I think you should keep communication open, things like that. I think the writer is perfectly within their rights to be aggrieved by that part. But I also think that sometimes maybe you don't know exactly what you want until you see the first drafts.
Yeah.
And so you kind of think, like, okay, like, just be open, be creative, and then you read it and you go, oh no, wait, I definitely, like, have my direction now, sorry. Yeah, it's better if you can do that in the outline. But for some things, like maybe if you're doing, especially things like fiction, even the story collection I was working on for Monarchies of Mao recently, I gave them a good outline as far as the tone and everything, but as far as their individual adventures and what they were writing, I kind of was like, eh, have fun, you know? Here's kind of what I want for all of them, but have fun. And then during Red Lines is when I kind of went, oh, no, let's focus more on this thing and tighten this up and whatever. I don't think they were hefty Red Lines for that one, but there definitely were a lot of notes kind of shaping it differently once I saw what they had done. Now, as far as the communication, that's on both parties for the several months.
Right.
Maybe the dev is super busy and has 8,000 other projects. So maybe it's more on the writer at that point to reach out and say, like, hey, I'm thinking about this, thinking about that. But also I think as a developer, it is nice to check in on your team occasionally, whether you use tools like Slack or Discord, or whether you just send out emails and say like, hey, how you doing? How's everybody going? You know, let me know what state your drafts are in. If you have any questions, I'm here for you. That's something that I do a lot in the Exalted Slack, for instance, is just kind of show up and say like, hey, I'm here if you need me, just so you know. So yeah, that's kind of my gut instinct, but if you want to refine that and expand on it, Eddie, go for it.
Your gut's pretty accurate, and that's one reason why I wanted to hear it first, is because I was curious to see kind of how you were parsing this stuff. But yeah, I mean,
good job, gut.
Yeah, your gut is pretty close. In terms of what they can do, there's two things. What you can do now is just like you said, Matthew, which is reach out to the developer and say, "Hey, I have some concerns. It's a pretty strong Redlands. Can we talk them through?"
Yeah.
And if the developer comes back with "just do them," then at the end of the day, as we talked about on the panel, that's the gig. You know, as frustrating as it is, sometimes that's what you have to do. I worked on a video game project where it wasn't quite the same situation. I was actually in good communication with my client. But near the end of the project, he was, by the way, we have to completely redo everything you're working on right now. This is because the project shifted scope. And so I had to kind of redo a lot of the work I'd already done. So sometimes this stuff does happen. And sometimes the answer is just kind of, you know, from a development standpoint is, well, you know, I just need you to do this. I personally feel like being more transparent with freelancers is helpful. So that's more of a style thing than a requirement thing.
Right. Yeah. That's like why I'm like my developing style, as far as I'm concerned, is to try to talk to them more and be there for them and answer questions. But not everybody has that style. And right. There are people that are not doing this full time like the three of us are. So they don't maybe have the time to, you know, constantly be checking in on people,
right,
especially if they're doing lots of projects at once.
Now, from the freelancer side, a way to kind of avoid those situations in future is I've been on the other side of that, where the developer isn't quite sure what they want, or the client isn't quite sure what they want, and I've kind of had to have a talk with them and say, hey, can we focus this down? And sometimes they just won't have an answer for me. And like you said, sometimes it's because they don't know what they want until they see it. In that case, if you're given a relatively weak outline and you're not getting a ton of communication, rather than writing a whole draft, you should write a short bit of that draft with maybe a couple variations and say, okay, I have two or three options I want you to look at. Tell me which one's closer to what you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Get that, yeah, and give them something to chew on.
That's an interesting approach.
That's something that I did recently with Rose Bailey. I'm doing a project for her right now. It's only a few thousand words, but I had written about, I don't know, half of it. And I was kind of like, I want to make sure I'm going in the right direction, and essentially did early red lines. Mm-hmm. Was like, hey, can you read this and tell me if that's what you're looking for? Luckily it was, but if it hadn't been, I would have, you know, turned it around and started over. If she had kind of said, yeah, like, no, that's actually completely wrong, then I would have changed it.
I can see why that's a good method for some freelancers and would definitely not be for others, because mm-hmm. if for instance I did have dozens of writing projects, the one thing I probably wouldn't want to be doing is writing lots of samples, even a few, you know, a couple of thousand words wasted potentially could be a knock on one of my days worth of work. So mm-hmm. I would put that down to the position that freelancer is in terms of how much workload they have.
That's fair. But I'm also not thinking a couple thousand words. I'm thinking like a few paragraphs.
A pitch, like, then, basically. Right,
yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, like, for example, it's the, okay, I need you to write say, three characters. I'm like, okay, cool. What's the character template? And they, well, we don't really have one. I'm like, all right, cool. Then I'm going to write a, you know, part of a character, and I'm going to have stuff like, you know, yada, yada, background goes here, stuff. But you kind of say, okay, do you want something like this structure, something like this structure, something like this structure? And, you know, you don't put in a lot of time and effort into these. It's meant to be very hand-wavy. You know, this is not going to be final quality. I'm just trying to get a sense of answering specific questions. So, no, don't. I wouldn't recommend doing that. But again, I get this bit from the video game side, because sometimes it's a case of, okay, I'm writing in an Excel sheet or something. And I need to know, at the end of the day, is the stuff I'm putting into the sheet going to be exported in a way that makes sense for the engineering side? So it's like, I'll put in dummy text to make sure that that's going in the right direction. Or I'll put in a character that's I'll write up a character quickly or a section quickly that's absolutely not going to be in the book. But it's to address a very specific detail so that the person reading it isn't confused thinking this is first draft text. Don't write necessarily the thing that you're trying to shoot for. Instead, rather write to answer the questions you have. And if the direct say, hey, what do you need from this? If you're going to answer that way, then say, okay, cool. What about try a few things? It's akin to like taking a few different paint chips from a paint store and holding them up to your wall to see which color looks good. It's the same kind of idea. They're very small. There's not a lot of energy because you don't want to spend a lot of time buying the wrong can of paint. So it's the same kind of idea. It's something very small, very quick, just to get the idea out there and get an answer.
Yeah, okay. That actually makes more sense.
I think that answers my question quite fully, and this means we have had a very long podcast. But I'm glad you've covered that off, because I found that personally very useful.
Yeah, I think we're good with like a, you know, 50 minute or so outro. It's not a big deal. And honestly, that was a good question. That was one that we didn't answer on the panel, so
yeah.
Might as well, you know, get in there, dig in. We could probably do multiple episodes on freelancing, to be perfectly honest. Like, yeah. We could just do like a freelancing episode every month for the next year and wouldn't cover everything. not that I want to do that, for the record. I don't want to do that, but we could. With all the little piddling questions and strange British callers that sound remarkably like our hosts. So anyway, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm sure Matthew's going to interrupt me like 8 times, but thank you for listening to our podcast. I'm like waiting. I'm like nervous.
He's stalking.
All right. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the panel. If you're ever...
Yeah, I'm still here.
I'm just going to... just going to quietly sob to myself. Because I will never get through an outro and sound like a competent human being. Thanks for listening. See, here we go. Go ahead. Do it.
Snap into it.
Yep.
I've been thinking. Cream of the crop.
I don't know what's happening, as usual.
Just keep going.
I don't know who any of the impersonations are. It's just weird voices. Okay. Eddie, where can they find you on social media?
They can find me howling into the void on just about any social media websites under the account Eddie Fate, EDDYFATE, or Pugsteady. And you can also find me on those websites, eddiefate.com and pugsteady.com.
And Realms of Pugmire.
And RealmsofPugmire.com, yes.
Matthew?
He can find me on Twitter on first name macho, last name man,
at clack click bang, and on the Onyx platform as the Gentleman Gamer, and on YouTube as the Gentleman Gamer.
You've got to change your Twitter like display name now, right? Got to be Macho Man.
So after the Gentleman Macho Man.
Oh no. All right, and you can find me on most social media as Dixie Cyanide. You can find all of us at theonyxpath.com. Check out our forums. Please rate and review on iTunes, Google Play, any podcast app you have. Thanks for listening, and as always, many worlds, one podcast.